Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Michael Worster. Michael Worster was born in Moline, Illinois, and has lived in Iowa, Virginia, and Pennsylvania. He currently resides in Pittsburgh with his two Siamese cats, Clea and Hawthorne. He is a founding member of Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange and teaches at Pittsburgh Center for the Arts School. He is the author of three books of poetry, The Cruelty of the Desert by Cottage Wordsmiths, 1989, The Snake Charmer's Daughter, LMNOP, 2000, and a new book, The British Detective, published by Main Street Rag Press in 2009. He is co-editor with Judith R. Robinson of the anthology Along These Rivers, Poetry and Photography from Pittsburgh, by Quadrant Press in 2008. In 1996, Worster was an inaugural recipient of a Pittsburgh Magazine Harry Schwab Excellence in the Arts Award for his contributions to poetry and the community. In 2008, he was honored by students, friends, and fellow writers with a reading and volume of their work dedicated to him, entitled Stories About Time. Worster has fostered poetry in Pittsburgh for over 30 years, teaching, advising, and conducting a free monthly open workshop at City Books in the South Side, recently located to Panera Bread, corner of Halkett and Boulevard of the Allies in Oakland. A book launch for his new book, The British Detective, will be held on Sunday, October 4th at 4 p.m. at the Pittsburgh Steak Company, 1924 East Carson Street on the South Side, free and open to the public. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Great. Thank you, Jan.
Yeah, welcome. It's haven't had you on for a while, and this new book is the great time to have you.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, why don't you start with some poems from the book?
Well, it makes sense to start with the first poem.
Okay.
The first poem is called "Gunfire Breaks the Silence." A landscape, flat mountains multiplying backwards, broken towns like cast-off shells under the sky. The dead artist sprawled under a cactus tree at the edge of the town. Scrawled on his tablet, "I enclose and possess all creation. Open my doors." In the distance, near the horizon, horsemen riding away. So there's the first one. Now, the second poem I'm going to read is everybody's told me they love the title of the collection, The British Detective. I love the title, too. And they ask about it, and I haven't told them unless they know the poem. And so Your listeners are going to get sort of an advance insider scoop on where the title comes from. The poem it comes from is called The Corporation, and it's in three parts. I won't read the numbers. The Corporation. It was some force, I won't say spirit, entered the humans and animals and changed them. Much fighting of a terrible nature. We hired a British detective, but he soon disappeared. The young ship's captain was interested only in his marriage. After the reception, the protagonist walked home alone. He thought about the young captain and the angry clan leaders, each nailing the symbol of his clan to the wall. The lights along the boardwalk competed with the light of the moon on the water. There was no one around. And I think that the photograph on the cover of the book maintains that feeling of aloneness and desolation that the poem intends finally in the end. And the photograph was taken by Carol Towers, who, when she lived in Pittsburgh, was known as Carol Sinani. Beautiful photograph. So let's do one more, and then you can speak if you'd like to or ask a question. And pulling these out sort of at random here, this poem is called Language. It's in two parts. One, I asked him, the bird, I saw you fight against the wind. Many of them came, a herd of them by the pool. Let the nervous creatures go. Our mouths speak the truth, like wings spread across the wood. A cicada convinced 1,000. The trumpeter was in front, the chariots behind. Two. We are leaves on the trees of all that is pure. How I love the current, it hurries and turns up. The image of the hunter comes in sleep, whitely drifting companions. The words lie huge, like dead kings on the plain.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Michael Worster, reading from his new book, The British Detective. Michael, you were talking about the photograph that's on the cover of that book, and we have that photograph in the studio right now, and I wanted to quote something that you said very recently, which is, when you're doing radio, always dress for television in case you have a clairvoyant listening.
That's right, yeah. In case there are people out there who can't see my shirt, it's a picture of myself in a suit carrying a briefcase that I used to carry frequently. And I wore that especially for tonight's show.
Mm-hmm. And also we have this photograph
also,
here
we have the
for
photograph.
The clairvoyants who are listening. So, yep. So anybody out there, see what you can see.
There you go.
Okay. I want to ask about how this book may be different from some of your other books. You know, the last one was The Snake Charmer's Daughter. Is that correct?
Yep.
And I'm thinking, because I know you a little bit, you know, you're an exploring kind of writer and a surprising writer. And I'm wondering about the theme of this book and how it might be different from the last.
Well, there's a chance element in the way that I do books. What happens is a book comes out containing poems that have appeared in various magazines, journals, and anthologies. And then after that book comes out, once I have 60 or so poems that have been in magazines, journals, and anthologies, I organize that into a new book manuscript. I arrange it first chronologically and then make any alterations that I think might be appropriate. So there's a chance aspect to it. One of the things in the second book, the title poem, The Snake Charmer's Daughter, actually appears as a poem in the first book, but I felt it was such an important poem at the time, an Ars Poetica, that I reused it in the second book as the title poem. Now, the third book, this new book, The British Detective, I hope that it will delight people. I hope that it will make them afraid on one level. I hope they get a variety of experiences from it. Once the manuscript is together and I've put it, organized it, it seems to me that the theme of this book is wake up. I think people need to wake up. Now, what does that mean? Well, I'm not really sure in the sense that I'm not going to tell you what it means. That's something you may read this book and not even come to that conclusion. But we're living in an era in which language is under question. I remember a recent political argument, I believe during the Clinton administration, where there was a debate over the meaning of the word is. So I'm saying that the message or a message of this volume is wake up. But you can decide for yourself if it really is that or how that works for you. Is that an answer?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
That's a lot of answer.
There you go.
But let me ask you more about that answer. Continuing this idea of the mystical and the leaping, you know, you just did say a lot, and yet it seems like you always leave a lot up to the listener and the reader, and that's a plan that you have or an aesthetic that you have. Would you say that's accurate?
That's pretty important to me.
Yeah.
I find with works of art that if there's no room for me to participate, I get bored. And if there's a work of art and everything is so predictable, it may be something that you've never experienced, but you know that you could have experienced it because it's, you know, mundane or lacking in freshness. And so I'm sort of working out there to create art objects, in this case poems, that will surprise and please me in one way or another.
You talked about delight. You said, I hope these will delight, but also scare people. That's an interesting pairing that came out immediately. Are those kind of emotions living in one poem?
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would hope so. Because I think that a unitary goal is just not of great interest to me. I like levels of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, this particular volume, when I think of it, I think of delight and I think of being frightened. And I feel that in this case, these are both emotions that will be good for the reader to experience. And of course, I can't count on the reader. You know, the reader basically takes over once they get the book, and how they experience it could be quite different from the way that I experience it.
Right. Okay. Could you read more poems?
Sure. Here's one called Geopolitics in November. Geopolitics in November. Walking from my car, a plastic cup rattling across an empty street in the wind, I thought of the Orientals, Basho, etc., how they would find significance in this. Now, when this was accepted for publication by a journal, the editor said, well, the title is much too subtle for my readership. If you allow me to title the poem November and get rid of the geopolitics, I'll publish it. I said, sure, go ahead. But now it's in the book, and I've given it the original title, and I think the poem is richer for that. Now, here's another poem. And again, what happens is, in the poem I just read, I mentioned Basho, and I referenced, and I used the politically incorrect term Orientals, and I thought I was thinking of the subtle sage poets, Basho, Issa, the great Chinese and Japanese poets. Now, in this next poem, it's sort of my own version of the film noir concept. And the classic film noir actually comes out of people like Raymond Chandler and Ross McDonald, and their work was set in California. And California is not dark. It's filled with sunlight. So they actually pulled off quite a trick by writing an art of darkness that occurs in a sun-drenched location. So here's my poem called The Author. Remembering the shot that seemed to burst with no warning on the back street. I was proud. Shops on my one side, supertankers and half-day boats on the other. This was a California that never emerged from the waves. Some canyons, passage of human hours, a bird or a stone in flight. I saw the movie. I wrote the book. And you might know, Jan, because I know you've seen a lot of my work, you're aware that saying something like a bird or a stone in flight is characteristic of me, giving the reader the opportunity to choose or to think about the fact that, well, is it a bird or is it a stone? Some people, maybe William Logan would be impatient with that, but that's his problem.
he's really not here right now.
No, but, you know, I hope he reviews my book in the New York Times and mm-hmm. says a lot of witty, nasty things about it. God bless him. Here's one called The Picnic. I suppose this is a love poem. I was on a picnic with friends down by the river, and I saw a woman who resembled you in the water. She was waiting, and I wanted to be with her rather than with them. And I wanted to be with you rather than with her. Yes, there were the geese and ducks. The sun shone and a breeze blew something that was like goose down from the trees. Lots of boats out on the water. And I wanted to be with you.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Michael Worster. He's reading from his new book, The British Detective. Michael, this is an exciting time for you with this new book and for your readers also. Can you tell us about the book launch that's happening fairly soon?
Well, the book launch is being produced and organized by my dear friend Judith Vollmer, a wonderful poet and dear friend. And it's going to be at Pittsburgh Steak Company on October 4th, a Sunday, 4 in the afternoon. I'll be doing a reading. Books will be available for purchase. There are a significant number of people who took advantage of a pre-publication offer. They should have received their copies by the time of the launch. They can bring those for signing. There will be a cash bar and hors d'oeuvres. It'll be a reading and a party and a generally good time.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. So I just want to mention it again, Sunday, October 4th at 4 p.m., and Pittsburgh Steak Company, for those who don't know, is 1924 Carson Street, right on Carson Street, between 19th and 20th. And so it's basically free and open to the public with a cash bar and hors d'oeuvres. And you can hear Michael reading his poems, some of which he's reading tonight.
I should mention, while we're talking about things about this book, I should mention my publisher. Main Street Rag is a literary journal. And they also have a very ambitious publishing program, publishing a lot of poetry books and chapbooks. The man himself is M. Scott Douglas, originally from Pittsburgh, lives in Charlotte, North Carolina, has his own print shop, which makes it easier for him to produce books than than if he did not have his own print shop. And he's been very friendly to Pittsburgh area poets. He's published many in his journal, and he's also published books and chapbooks by people like Mike Schneider, Joan Bauer, Romella Kitchens, folks like that. So Pittsburgh should give a tip of the hat to Scott Douglas.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's somebody to notice and thank. But I want to go back to this journal idea, because earlier you said that once you publish 60 or so poems, then you organize your poems chronologically, and that's a lot of poems to publish. And I know that there are writers out there thinking, 60 poems, how does he do that? And so maybe you could talk about
My second book was 91 pages.
Okay.
My first book was 48 pages. In those days, a book of 48 or more pages was considered a book rather than a chapbook, even if it was saddle-stapled rather than perfect-bound. Quickly, though, it became thought of as a chapbook when ideas changed. But I just write these poems, and then I send them out to various magazines and journals. And sort of my idea is that by having some editor select poems to publish, that sort of gives them the certification that, hey, these are okay poems. And the ones that have not been published yet, I usually hold for future books. Actually, the one poem in this volume that was not published anywhere is the title poem, The Corporation. And again, to show how arguable, and I don't mean this in a negative sense, this whole idea of poetry is, that the title poem, The Corporation, was the only poem in the volume that my friend Joan Bauer found totally incomprehensible. But my friend James Deal, the Canadian poet, thought it was the best poem in the manuscript. So there we are. That's one reason why I sort of let those editors out there certify, because it sort of has somebody else saying, hey, this is a good poem.
That's right. That's right. And I think you just made some writers out there feel a lot better, because we've all had that experience of, you know, showing our work to two poets who we admire greatly and them having totally opposite opinions.
Sure.
And, you know, so that's just the way it goes in poetry land. So why don't you read some more poems?
Sure. Yeah, I remember once Ellen Smith, another dear friend, I have a poem called Tuareg. And she said, Michael, that's not a poem, it's an encyclopedia entry. God bless her, she may be right. Now, here's a poem called Dali's Turn. And naturally, since it's Dali is D-A-L-I, we're talking about Salvador Dali, who was a surrealist. So when we see this title, we're ready for some surrealism, and here it comes. Flies settle on the toothless gums of the overturned bridges. Among thick, lowering clouds, many ears dance on the sand. Yellow shadows cut the eyes. Bill Weiner plays Spanish Fandango. Blind Blake and Boss Crump dance on the margins. Mothers with babies at their breasts. Eggs exhibit wonder. The horizon comes down, extinguishing the fiery columns. So there you are. Now people can look up Blind Blake and Boss Crump, significant American historical figures. Bill Weiner is a terrific local country blues musician who plays Spanish Fandango, a tune that's usually associated with Mississippi John Hurt. Here's a poem entitled Corpse and Mirror. The mechanical man bows beneath the crystal chandelier. Those who do not behave are discarded. The gravediggers lower the chariot gently, as if they have always loved its occupant, a parent, or favorite mistress. A pulse of expectation is followed by a need. The mechanical woman stops to talk. The porcelain glaze of noon filters in. The mechanical man picks at his dinner, reads a gossip column. The top of the salt shaker falls off into the soup. The weight of his bones speaks to him. Each resides in the end in a child's blue velvet box. They rest comfortably in their new home while the chariot rises and flies off in ever-widening circles. So I hope there's a little bit there that might terrify you in that poem, and perhaps there might be some originality, some surprises that would delight you. Now, here's a poem that's much more autobiographical. This poem is called Dead or Alive. When I was a young man and desperate, one day I got one bill too many, wrote deceased on the envelope, marched it down to the corner and dropped it in the mailbox. A half hour later, a knock at the door. The postman. Michael, you're either dead or alive. If you're dead, I have to return all your mail. If alive, you can't pick and choose. Sadly, I reached out my hand.
I was thinking, that's a great idea. I could maybe use that, but
yeah,
then
it doesn't
it
work.
I have a question
sure.
before we go any further. I don't know if this is on target at all, but I was just wondering about if there's a relationship between, the way as a writer you like to allow multiple readings and have a sense of mystery and openness in your work, and the way that you tend to run things in terms of a workshop, because I know you're a big fan of the non-hierarchical workshop that people come in and people have a free workshop and they, feel free to say almost anything they need to say.
Well, people are at different levels of proficiency in an open workshop. And the goal to me, the point of having the workshop is so people can find out how their poems are read and can get comments and feedback and suggestions from other poets. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to hold a novice to the same strictness that you would hold a veteran. So one of the things that I seem to be able to do successfully is to work with people of different levels of proficiency in the same group. And usually when I approach a poem, I first find something good to say about it. And then if there are things that need to be addressed that could make it a better poem, I address that. And part of what I say is not necessarily meant even to cause a rework of that poem, but to give the person information that will perhaps help them write better poems in the future. Now, our dear friend Jack Wolford, who is deceased, Jack was a wonderful guy, but in a workshop, he could be brutal because he didn't have that ability to bend and to suit the criticism to meet the emotional realities of the particular poet being discussed.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important.
Oh, yeah. And I want to mention that, you began the Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange in 1974 as a community-based and service organization, and you've been holding workshops for all these years, which is...
Right.
We want to thank you for that.
Well, I love it. I like doing it. And a workshop is a form of publication because what's happening is you've got 10 or 15 or 20 people hearing your poem and reading it and responding to it. And really, I think the purpose of it for me as a poet, rather than as a teacher, I'm hearing about how my poem is read by somebody other than myself. And it's very, very useful. And the way I work, I rarely revise a poem because of what's said in a workshop, but it keeps me grounded. I know what I'm doing because other people are telling me what I'm doing. It's not just relying on my own intuition as to whether the poem is saying something or not.
Okay. And these workshops have recently moved from City Books to Panera.
Panera Bread in Oakland, yeah. We had a small workshop in my home in Margaretta Street in 1974. We've been at, people won't remember these places. We've been at Lion Walk Performing Arts Center. We've been at the famous Ryder Cultural Center. For a while, we were in the Joyce Building, which was a building of accountants on the south side. We were at City Books for quite some time. It's been a great experience, and hopefully it'll continue even after I'm gone.
Okay, so it's a free workshop every...
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Once a month?
At City Books, we put a dollar in the basket to go to City Books for use of the space. At Panera's, we won't be doing that because we'll be presumably buying at least coffee and possibly sandwiches and stuff like that as well.
Okay. We have time for just a few poems, I think. Could you read some more?
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the last two poems in the book. And again, this will give you an idea, perhaps, of what is going on here, what is being attempted. The first poem is called Vaucluse, and it's dedicated to René Char, the surrealist poet, who is from Vaucluse, which is an area in Provence in the south of France, Vaucluse. Before I could call myself by my true name, the bird sang and was gone, one feather. When day withdraws to the ends of the earth, the nimble torches of the mind surface again. Within your kindness, my anguish grows. Ancient instruments oppose your acclimatized eyes. There are worse things in our lives always. The fruit is ripe. Flies and ghosts are kept out. I am not on the point of death. All this transparency pushes time back. What I lost was the immeasurable sun. How could I have let it get away? And then the concluding poem in the book is almost ironic in the light of what I said earlier about the message of the book perhaps being Wake Up. The poem is called Conversation with Jewel, Jewel being a friend of mine, short for Julianne, Conversation with Jewel. What did I always tell you? What? I said, don't get caught napping. Don't let them catch you napping. And what happens? I open the newspapers, and there you are.
Okay. That would be a great time to end, but we still have a little more time here.
Well, I have more poems, okay, so let's pull out another one at random.
Okay.
Here's one called Hot Day on the North Side. We saw a heavy bearded guy in a pink dress trying to walk in high heels. You said, the mysterious helps us survive. I said, he's not mysterious, he's just sad. The postman peers through the mesh. Is it a man or woman in there? The day is red hot. By the school, it was like a pep rally. The whole day was a shimmering mess. A voice like chocolate icing called a name. The two women turned, looked at us, and smiled. The drapes in the next window were a rose color. The proprietor was absent. As I write this, the postman turns and moves on. So with that one, there's a couple things going on. One is I'm conflating some things that actually happened, and I'm making a few things up. Now, here's a poem that is absolutely factual. It's about a northern brigadier general, Civil War. It's entitled Brigadier Jefferson C. Davis. I killed Bull Nelson in Louisville in 1862. He insulted me in the lobby of the Galt House while I was in the company of the governor of Indiana. Nelson gave me the back of his hand, and as he went up the stairs, I went from bystander to bystander asking for a weapon. A certain Captain Gibson obliged. I always carry the article, he said, producing it from under his coat. As I started up the stairs, Gibson called after me. It's a Tranter trigger. Work light. When Nelson turned from Buell's door and started toward me, I knew what to do. Not another step farther, I cried, then shot the big man in the chest at a range of about 8 feet. I was denied promotion for 2 years, but when Sherman needed me for Georgia, I was ready. They said I had the eyes of a killer. I rolled up Dan Govan's Arkansas Brigade at Jonesboro like a sheet of paper. So there's a poem that's historically accurate. It's in prose stanzas, but one of the things that I do is that I get rid of everything that doesn't serve the poem. There's a lot more to know about Jefferson C. Davis, and a biography of him, of course, can be found. So let's see if we can read one here that might be fairly short for the ending. Here's one called American Literature. Finally, a stranger at the end of the bar scanned us all and, apropos of nothing, said, a lot of people felt that way about Mexico, but when they got there, all they did was drink and die.
Okay, that's it for tonight, Michael. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really was great. That's the poetry of Michael Worster. Michael Worster will be reading from his new book, The British Detective, on Sunday, October 4th, at the Pittsburgh Steakhouse at 4 p.m. on the South Side. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the arts entertainment news weekly published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.